Hello there, my friends, and welcome back. My name is Stephanie Safarian, and you're listening to a Headlines episode here on the Sustainable Minimalist Podcast. Headlines are quick, to the point, so that we can get the need-to-know environmental news headlines that we may have missed in the past week and then get on with our days. I have five stories for you today. Some of them are quick. Let's get into the quickest one of the day, and also, in my opinion, the most interesting. It is all about the new study that was released on Wednesday of this week that revealed the world's biggest plastic polluters. Every year, companies produce more than 400 million metric tons of plastic. What a number. It's hard to get my head around that number. It's just so big. But just 56 companies are responsible for more than 50% of all the branded plastic waste around the world. And now this new study, it was published in Science Advances. To get the data, thousands of volunteers around the world conducted plastic audits. So they scoured beaches, parks, rivers, and other locations for plastic waste. And then volunteers examined each piece of waste and recorded any visible brands or trademarks. There were over 1,500 audits collected between the years 2018 and 2022, and this is what they found. Are you ready? The biggest plastic polluters. The biggest is Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola accounted for 11% of the branded plastic pollution worldwide. Other top companies included PepsiCo, Nestle, and Danone. Meanwhile, global leaders are meeting in Ottawa this week to hammer out a global plastics treaty. Many environmental groups, many countries, they are looking for an agreement that will include cutting the amount of plastic production. So not cleaning up the plastic once it's in our environment, but cutting the production of plastic in the first place. This is something that U.S. negotiators have long resisted. So stay tuned. We're moving on to discuss news out of the White House also this week. Biden limits oil drilling in 13 million acres in the Alaskan Arctic. Three cheers for that. But first, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the new plan, let me introduce you first to the National Petroleum Reserve in Alaska. It is about 23 million acres. It's about the size of Indiana. It is also incredibly ecologically valuable. This area provides a critical refuge for tens of thousands of migrating caribou, as well as polar bears, grizzly bears, walruses. There's a lake in the eastern part of the reserve. It's one of the most important places for waterfowl in the entire Arctic. Up to 100,000 geese meet there each and every summer as they seek refuge from predators, as they molt and therefore become flightless. The wetlands that are adjacent to the lake is a breeding ground for shorebirds. So it sounds great. It's very ecologically valuable, right? It's also financially valuable because this reserve is one of the most promising onshore oil prospects in the country. The Biden administration announced this week a gigantic plan to protect this federal land and reverse former President Trump's opening of the reserve to oil and gas leasing. As of this week, future oil and gas drilling will be limited across more than 13 million acres of the National Petroleum Reserve in Alaska. Now, in a separate move, the Interior Department announced also that it will block a controversial road that's crucial to operating a planned copper and zinc mine in northern Alaska. The Interior Department said that it would threaten indigenous communities and fragment wildlife habitats. Now, Biden said, and I quote, "Alaska's majestic and rugged lands and waters are among the most remarkable and healthy landscapes in the world. These natural wonders demand our protection," end quote. So it's good news for the planet, but I would say, in my humble opinion, this is not an entirely altruistic decision. Don't forget, we're in an election year here in the U.S., and young, environmentally leaning liberals, they're still angry at Biden. They haven't forgotten that the Biden administration gave the green light to that massive drilling project on Alaska's North Shore last year. Remember Willow? So yeah, Alaska is, quote, majestic and rugged and deserves protection sometimes, but not when there's oil to be drilled and money to be made, and certainly in an election year. But I digress. I'm getting salty. So these protections for the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, are expected to face lawsuits from fossil fuel companies. It's expected to face fierce opposition from Alaskan lawmakers, and in particular, Representative Mary Peltola. Peltola is a Democrat. She's facing a tough re-election contest. And she essentially argues that Alaska can be responsibly developed, and it should be up to Alaskans to determine their future. So that's that story. Let's move along and discuss the Great Barrier Reef. The Great Barrier Reef is experiencing one of its worst coral bleaching events as we speak. Now, let's talk about coral bleaching for a moment. Bleaching, we know it's when coral turns white, right? But bleaching occurs when coral that is stressed because of too warm heat, the coral is too hot, the coral turns white when the algae that lives on the coral, and the algae is what provides food and color for the coral, leaves. It gets off. It goes away. This is a result of abnormal ocean temperatures, and scientists worry that this major bleaching event in the Great Barrier Reef could represent a major change to Earth's systems. Now, this bleaching event we're discussing, it is one of the worst bleaching events since monitoring began nearly four decades ago. In the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park, 73% of the reefs surveyed have prevalent bleaching, which means that more than 10% of the coral cover is bleached. Very high and extreme bleaching was observed across nearly 40% of the entire reef system. And for the first time, bleaching was observed in all three regions of the marine park. So this is the Great Barrier Reef's fifth major bleaching event in 9 years. And while the Great Barrier Reef is incredibly resilient, scientists do warn and worry that even resilience has its limits. Now, the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority's chief scientist said, and I quote, "Climate change is the greatest threat to the Great Barrier Reef, and coral reefs globally are experiencing unprecedented bleaching." What does this mean? Yes, that means that bleaching is happening worldwide. At least 53 countries and local regions have experienced mass bleaching across the Atlantic, Pacific, and Indian Oceans in the last 10 years. And it's because, primarily, of warming ocean temperatures. We're going to take our ad break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about air pollution here in the United States, and we're also going to talk about cloning. Is cloning a potential solution to our endangered species problems? We'll get to both of those stories after our quick sponsor break. If you've been paying attention, you've likely heard something about gut health and why zoning in on your gut health is so darn important. You need EQ's Daily Women's Microbiome Defense. It's a 3-in-1 capsule that supports your digestive health and promotes gut barrier protection. I started taking EQ's Daily Women's Microbiome Defense because I have a bloating problem, friends. Yes, I do. Inflammation is not my friend. Since taking one capsule a day on an empty stomach with water, I have noticed more energy, improved skin, and here's the big one, reduced bloating. Head to myeq.com and use code SUSTAINABLE for 15% off Equilibria's microbiome defense and so much more. That's myeq.com and use code SUSTAINABLE at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Mother's Day is around the corner, and I have the best gift idea for you. Hold on to your hats. It's mylifeinabook.com. Every week, My Life in a Book will send your mom a question via email. They will compile all of your mom or the mom in your life's answers and create a legacy keepsake book. The book becomes something you and future generations can treasure forever. I gave both my mother and my mother-in-law My Life in a Book, and they've already started responding to the prompts when my mother-in-law received her first prompt, she said, oh my goodness, what a thoughtful gift. And that's what we all want, right? We all want to give thoughtful gifts. So check out mylifeinabook.com and use code SUSTAINABLE at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day, mylifeinabook.com, and use code SUSTAINABLE for 10% off today. And we're back. Before the break, we discussed the biggest plastic polluters. We discussed Biden's new rule to protect an ecologically important area in Alaska. And we also discussed the bleaching that's currently happening on the Great Barrier Reef and worldwide. Now we're moving on to air pollution here in the United States. A new study released this week found that more than 131 million Americans were living in places with unhealthy air between 2020 and 2022. 131 million Americans. Are you one of them? That's nearly 2 in 5 Americans have been living with unhealthy levels of air pollution. The United States experienced a record number of days between those years with very unhealthy or hazardous air. Now, the American Lung Association's annual State of the Air Assessment tracks daily and yearly exposure to particle pollution. That's caused by things like forest fires, stoves, coal-fired power plants, diesel engines, ground-level ozone pollution, which is affectionately or not so affectionately known as smog. One of the report's authors said, quote, "Not only the number of people and places affected are worsening, but also the severity of the pollution is worsening." Now, poor air increases the risk of health ailments like lung damage, cardiovascular problems. It also exacerbates existing conditions and causes premature deaths. Yes, you can die from air pollution. Communities of color are historically disproportionately affected by poor air quality. And of the 30 counties that the American Lung Association said had failing grades on all three of its air pollution measurements, 63% of residents were people of color. Now, the EPA did announce new air pollution standards this year, which we covered on a previous headlines episode. It will take until the year 2032 to meet these new standards. And meanwhile, climate change will continue to present challenges to air quality regulation. Now, for 6 years straight, the number of people living in counties that experienced unhealthy spikes in particle pollution has increased. 7 of the 25 cities with the worst daily pollution saw their highest ever number of unhealthy days. And that's in places like Las Vegas, Portland, and Seattle metro areas. They had such bad declines in air quality that they moved into the top 25 most polluted cities. Now, these spikes, researchers believe, they're largely due to extreme heat, drought, and wildfires. And if you've been paying attention, you know that extreme heat, drought, and wildfires, those are thanks to climate change. Now, if you're wondering where the cleanest air is in the United States, the report does highlight Bangor, Maine, Honolulu, Wilmington, North Carolina, Lincoln, Nebraska, and the Johnson City metro area in Tennessee and Virginia. Now, before we say goodbye, let's talk about cloning. Yes, let's do it. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced on Wednesday of this week that last year, 2 baby ferrets were cloned from cells frozen nearly 4 decades ago. So the 2 ferrets were born through cloning successfully last year, and it was announced this week. So let's go back 4 decades. Up to 1 million black-footed ferrets once romped across mountain basins and grasslands here in the United States, and then they largely were killed off due to disease, plague. Their numbers plummeted. In 1979, what was believed to be the last black-footed ferret died in captivity. But wait, in 1981, a Wyoming cattle rancher stumbled upon a small group of black-footed ferrets. They were brought into captivity and biologists began breeding them again, but they only had a handful of ferrets to work with. The problem then became an extremely limited gene pool. One of these ferrets that was found in 1981, her name was Willa. She did not leave any living descendants, so scientists collected some of her cells and froze them. Fast forward to 2023, two baby ferrets named Noreen and Antonia were born last May, and they were cloned by injecting one of Willa's cells into an egg from a domesticated ferret. Now, this is considered a successful cloning milestone in the effort to save the black-footed ferret, yes, but there still remains a severe lack of genetic diversity that threatens the long-term survival of this species. Now, let's zoom out. Back in 2019, the United Nations published a report with quite alarming findings. The report found that 1 million plant and animal species are on the verge of extinction, with alarming implications for human survival. More plants and animals are threatened with extinction now than at any other period in human history. And so nature's current rate of decline is unparalleled. So think about that the next time you think about squishing that spider in your bathroom or hanging up that bug zapper on your porch or spraying your yard with pesticides, right? Plants and the animals, they do not need any more struggle in their struggle to survive. But the report made clear the fact that animals and plants are going extinct. And that's bad in and of itself, yes, but it's especially bad for humans. The bigger issue is the way that the extinction of plants and animals will affect human well-being and our search for food, water, energy. Okay, so it affects us. I've linked to that full UN report in this week's show notes if you'd like to read. But with hundreds of thousands of plants and animals at risk of extinction, scientists, policymakers, they are increasingly turning to extraordinary technological means like cloning to rescue endangered species, sea stars, songbirds. I could go on and on. But what about the genetic diversity issue that we just discussed with the black-footed ferrets? If there's a lack of genetic diversity, we are setting up the new species, the cloned species, for disease and, again, possible struggle, possible death. Can cloning be a solution with these two new ferrets? Conservationists do hope to begin breeding these two females later this year and inject some new blood into this budding population. That's our show today. We will be back on Tuesday. I will see you then. Have an amazing weekend. Reach out if you need me and take care.